or should we have a little pregame chat again?
Okay. This is Garage Lot. Nope.
Hold on.
It's not.
Fratelloni's Ace Hardware and Garden Stores brings you in part Garage Logic number one. No, start again.
There we go, Larry. Larry, do not go back.
Quit saving that
stuff. Don't be saving that stuff, Larry. What the hell? Where else was
that? Podcast 278.
No. Fratelloni's Ace Hardware and Garden Stores brings you Garage Logic podcast number 154, May 8th. I had a serious Royce-like gas attack.
What the hell?
May 8th, 2019. Now, Aquaside, if you had it back in 1963, the kids were swimming on this day because it was 92 degrees.
Wow.
And in 1885, it was 27 degrees.
Ugh. Yeah, as long as I get the time in the dam.
We'll take care of that later.
We'll help you out now. From the mayor's office, above the boathouse, on the east shore of Spoon Lake, it's Garage Logic with Rookie on production. Chris Reavers, director of social media. John Hyde in the newsroom. And occasionally Kenny from the Krabby Coffee Shop. Here is your flashlight king, fireworks commissioner, and keeper of common sense. Your mayor, Joe Souchere.
I want to revisit two stories from yesterday. The first being Alexandria Ocasional Cortex and her presumed astonishment at discovering that her apartment had a garbage disposal.
Mm-hmm. Right.
A lot of people want to point out to me that apparently garbage disposals were not allowed in New York.
I saw that.
Until the late 1990s, I believe.
So they weren't allowed and now they are.
Yeah, but so people are pointing this out to me.
See, I read that they are still illegal.
Yeah, that's what I...
Okay, then there is some justification in her saying, what the hell is this thing? Because she's seeing it in Washington, not
right,
New York.
Right, correct.
And I guess we're supposed to believe that she had never been made privy to one of these.
But I will still dispute that part of it, because even if you didn't have one or never were around one, you've seen a television show or a movie or something that had a disposal in it.
Well, I'm not done yet clarifying.
Okay.
Alec writes, it's so obvious I can't believe you didn't think of it. The video she posted of the garbage disposal is nothing but pandering. She has to show her constituents that even if she now lives in a big fancy apartment, she is still the woman who was held back by the patriarchy that they voted for. Otherwise, no one would post a video about something so stupid. Yeah. It's a ruse. Bert writes, Joe, I'm fairly certain AOC's interaction with her garbage disposal was deliberately obtuse and provocative. It's her attempt to turn her role in Washington into an ersatz reality media show. She was being purposely asinine and roped you in to give her yet more unwarranted airtime. Let's call it the real twits of D.C., or more ominously, America's Got Socialists. Well, that's a good point, too. Huh. And James, Sanibel Jim writes, I heard on... one of the national talk shows at the city of New York has a ban on garbage disposals for several years. But when they were again approved, apparently few retrofits were accomplished. Okay. And Downing, who never fails to pass up a chance to get me.
Yeah.
Never fails to pass up a chance to get me, said.
What did he say?
Yeah, that AOC is sure out of touch with us real Americans, not knowing her way around the kitchen. I bet she couldn't even tell us whether she has a gas or electric stove.
Good one.
You got me, I didn't know that.
Shot in the goal.
That's when you and the CP, you went to go buy the new one. At Sears, was it?
Oh, Dayton's. They had some store out in Roseville.
Home store, probably.
And the guy says, gas or electric? And she says, why don't you take a shot?
Yeah, 50-50.
That guy figured I had a 50-50 chance.
You were wrong.
And I was wrong. That's the 50-50-90 rule. You got a 50-50 chance of being right. You're wrong 90% of the time.
Boom.
My take on AOC is that it was a bit. I did fall for it, and I gave her way too... I read way too much into it. It was a bit. And the other reason it tells me it's a bit is you're not hearing any more about it today.
Well, we kind of talked about that yesterday, we kind of thought it was a bit. Do you know, or
I fell for it.
Did you discover why, or do you know why New York bans garbage disposals?
It was some fear of overburdening the city's sewer system.
Okay.
Yeah. So I like the idea that she is positioning herself to be some sort of celebrity. and that this probably isn't the last time we'll see her post something that we think is ridiculous, and she's being very calculating about it.
Alec, was it Alec you said?
Bird is the one who came up with the reality show.
Well, the one previous to that, about pandering.
Yeah.
He nailed it. That's exactly what this is.
Yeah. Well, anyway, maybe I should stick to my guns and we don't bring her up, because I brought her up, and now she's to her credit, I think she's probably having the last laugh. Look at these saps around the country who really think I didn't know what a garbage disposal was.
Oh, we said yesterday she was trolling.
She was parodying her own self.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Residential garbage disposals were illegal in New York City until 97. In the 70s, yes, Joe, it was because garbage disposals were not good for the aged sewer system.
Okay. The second thing I want to revisit from yesterday is we discussed the Great Lakes water levels are surging. They've rebounded splendidly.
Due to climate change?
Yes, and I found myself really thinking about it a lot yesterday, and then this morning I reread the story. The Pioneer Press got around to it today, and that's the story of water levels are surging in the Great Lakes and likely will set records this summer, forecasters said Monday. A remarkable turnaround from earlier this decade that's bringing welcome relief to shippers and marina owners, but you got to have a but causing flooding and heavy erosion in some areas. And I was taken by the quote by a guy named Drew Groenewald of the University of Michigan School for Environment and Sustainability.
Okay.
And the quote was, "These events," meaning the rise in Great Lakes lake levels, "these events are quite consistent with what scientists have been expecting with long-term climate change patterns," said Drew Groenewald of the University of Michigan School for Environment and Sustainability. "The challenge is that it's very hard to forecast when these extremes are going to occur and when the transition between them might occur." And I found myself developing some questions. If you can't predict when it's going to be a low lake level and you can't predict when it's going to be a high lake level, then how can you say that's due to climate change?
Right.
I also thought, if you'll recall, Rook, didn't we have a University of Minnesota Duluth prof on back in 2013? At that time, the lake levels were so low that we were being told that's due to global warming.
Yes.
You recall that?
I do remember
His name
that.
Escapes me. I apologize.
I can't recall.
Well, if 2013 levels proved global warming, then wouldn't 2019 levels disprove global warming?
In theory,
yes. You can't have it both ways. But that's what the theocracy has become. They win because they win either way.
Yeah.
They said in 2013, global warming exists. Look at how low the lake level is in Lake Superior. You know, 2019, it's got to be climate change. You don't call it global warming. It's got to be climate change because look how high the lake is. Wait a minute.
Forget about 2013. We're 2019.
It's my old Uncle Jim, rest his soul. Let's flip on it. Heads I win, tails you lose.
So you ready, Reeves?
Yeah.
I called this fellow, Drew Groenewald of the University of Michigan School for Environment and Sustainability. This was earlier in the morning when he had some free time, and he was gracious and said, what did I say to him? Help me understand what in the God's name you're talking about here. And we had him on the air. You guys weren't here yet, but here it is. We're joined by Drew Groenewald. Hello, Drew. May I call you Drew or Professor?
Drew is fine.
I don't know if I'm in if I'm in the right pay grade to talk to a guy with a PhD from Duke.
we're all in the right grade together when it comes to talking about science and communicating the things that are happening right now. So we're in good shape.
The quote that I wanted to talk with you, and it was in the St. Paul Pioneer Press today. I believe it was in the Minneapolis Tribune yesterday, and you were consulted. You were called by a reporter, and right now Lake Superior and other Great Lakes are experiencing a tremendous rebound. Correct?
That's correct.
And your quote is, "These events are quite consistent with what scientists have been expecting with long-term climate change patterns," said Drew Groenewald of the University of Michigan School for Environment and Sustainability. "The challenge is that it's very hard to forecast when these extremes are going to occur and when the transitions between them might occur." Okay, that confuses me because it seems that's tantamount to saying that these are unpredictable. Would that be a fair statement?
That's So that's a really good question. And what we're talking about here is two different perspectives on time scales.
All right.
So from one perspective, when we look at climate change projections, particularly for the Great Lakes region, and we see that they indicate two things. One, an increase in temperature, both in the air temperature and the water across the region. But they also indicate an increase in precipitation. Then what we expect are periods of prolonged and sometimes surges in water levels when precipitation dominates evaporation. But then we can also expect periods of persistent lows like we saw from 1998 to 2013. Now, the thing is with these climate change projections, they don't predict specifically when and how the transitions might occur. For example, these projections are looking at multi-decadal periods, so several years in a row. And they do not include in them a prediction, for example, that there will be an Arctic polar vortex deformation, or more commonly, the polar vortex in the year 2013 in a certain month. So it's more general aggregation of events on those long-term projections, but you're absolutely right that the specific prediction of some of these and the timing of when they occur is, in fact, very difficult.
Well, then how can you with certainty say that these unpredictabilities are the result of climate change?
Because if you take the time, and what I encourage your listeners and others to do is take the time to look at historical data. There is a massive amount of historical data and historical records about water levels, temperature, and precipitation patterns. And so the question I would encourage folks to ask for themselves is, are the patterns that we're seeing now in temperature, water levels, precipitation, and evaporation consistent with all of the data we've seen in the past 50 years or 100 years, or are they unusual relative to all that data in the past? And if you find that it's unusual, which is what most scientists find when they look very hard at the data and the historical records, they also find that climate change provides the best explanation for some of the differences we're seeing between what's happening now and what had happened in these long historical records. So it really comes down, in large part, to folks listening to this show and others around the country to do their homework, look at data, and try to ask the question, how much evidence do you need to come to a conclusion about whether things are different now than they used to be, or whether they're simply the same?
Well, would it be unreasonable to suggest that everything you just said could have been said by a fellow in your position if your position existed in 1750?
Absolutely. That's very reasonable to suggest that at any point in time you could look at data, records, and compare what's happened in the past with what's happening now, and try to make an assessment as to whether or not there is evidence as to whether or not what's happening now is different from what's happening in the past. The amazing thing about the day and age we live in now is that we have satellite information. We have meteorological records that span the entire globe and have gone back for decades that can help us provide a really robust answer to that question.
In 2013, I had as a guest a professor from the University of Minnesota Duluth, and I apologize, his name escapes me. But in 2013, as you are certainly aware, it was a record low, and the ships were having trouble, and marinas were having trouble. And I was told that that was a proof of global warming. And my only confusion would be, if 2013 was proof of global warming — I'm not suggesting you were insisting that, this was the fellow I was talking to — if 2013 was proof of global warming, then wouldn't 2019 be the opposite, that would it disprove it?
Not necessarily. So global warming can manifest in many different ways at regional scales.
Okay.
So what we have evidence of is that across the entire globe, the average temperature has been going up. But what that can do is that can lead to a whole different cascade of events at regional scales. A couple of the events that it led to within the Great Lakes region were, number one, an increase in lake surface water temperatures. Mm-hmm. And what that led to was an increase in lake evaporation and water level declines. Now, there's also an evidence that, again, global warming, this synthesized average of temperatures across the entire globe has also been believed to lead to this Arctic polar vortex deformation that we've seen and witnessed.
Mm-hmm.
And an event like that one, while consistent with global change, can have a completely different impact at a regional scale, just like what we experienced in the Great Lakes. So you have global warming, a global scale impact, this wobbling of the Arctic polar vortex that comes down into Central North America and has a regional impact that is related to global warming but is inconsistent with what people might expect. You have a very cold winter, you have lower evaporation rates, consistent precipitation, and what happens to water levels? They go up.
Let me be clear. I sense that you agreed with me when I said we could be having this same conversation in 1710 or 1680. I'm arbitrarily picking years. And if that's true, do you agree with that? That we could be having this same exact conversation 300 years ago, for example. There could be a scientist in your position who could say, well, these are high lake levels now that we haven't seen in 6 years, and you could account for it with the high snow levels, runoff, melt, whatever. If that's true, aren't we just talking about the cycles of nature?
We could be having the same general conversation about how events now are comparing within the past and doing a comparison.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not entirely convinced, and I haven't done the homework to know whether we'd be coming to the same conclusion.
Okay.
About whether things are different now compared to records from 50 or 100 years ago.
But currently, what conclusion have you reached?
That the things that we've seen over the past 10 to 20 years differ quite a lot from what has been seen in the Great Lakes water level record going back 100 and plus years. And those include two things. First, a period of persistent below average water levels from around 1998 to 2013, driven by high surface water temperatures and increased evaporation. There really isn't any point in the historical record where the lakes, and particularly Lake Michigan and Huron, were below average water levels for that period of time. And the second event is right at the end of that period of persistent lows, water levels across the Great Lakes surge in response in part to the increased precipitation, but also the Arctic polar vortex deformation. And it's the highest rate of water level rise that we've seen in the entire historical record going back 150 years.
Do you suspect it will also now equally decline again?
It's hard to say. As we talked about earlier, making projections, and as you talked, you know, refer to them as predictions about what might happen in the next 2 to 3 years within a particular window is really hard to predict. And that goes back to the comment I made earlier about global climate change and its impact on regional scales. So, for example, an event like an Arctic polar vortex deformation has such a profound impact at a regional scale, but there were very few models that predicted exactly when that deformation would occur and where exactly it would influence either North America or any other parts of the world. So that's what I'm getting to about the sort of short time scale predictability challenge.
Do you believe, or have you studied or thought of, do you hold the belief that there was a perfect climate at one point in the history of the Earth?
I can't really comment on that. I don't have a strong opinion.
What do you see 100 years from now? Do you have fear?
I do not necessarily have fear. I believe that many of the challenges that we face are much more pressing than what might be 100 years ahead. There are parts of the world right now that are suffering greatly from impacts of climate change in terms of drought, in terms of water abundance and flooding, that need to be addressed right now before we can think too far ahead in terms of 100 years. I do think there is a need, though, to make improved decisions about infrastructure planning, population growth, and distribution of resources on longer timescales to better address some of the events that have been occurring recently.
You sound terribly reasonable.
Well,
I mean, I've had a lot of fun on my show over the last year being puzzled by what I've been called the failing academy, meaning higher learning, and some of the strange things that have been happening. And it's a pleasure to be talking to you, is what I'm saying.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure talking with you as well.
Well, sir, I appreciate it, and I'm going to keep your number handy, and perhaps we'll talk again.
My pleasure.
Thank you. That's Drew Groenewald, a associate professor at the University of Michigan. You know, I don't think that guy and myself are that far apart. Twice he said, well, yeah, 300 years ago, we could be having the same conversation. What I think is that, and I did find him a very reasonable guy, very nice guy.
Yeah.
What I think has happened is that today what's getting attached to this conversation is the theocracy. What's getting attached to it is the fervent belief that somehow man in his current state in the year 2019 is suggesting that climate change is ominous, where it's never been ominous. It was ominous to the dinosaurs. They died. And it was ominous to the splitting of continents. And it was ominous to but it's not ominous. So 300 years ago, if this position existed at the University of Michigan, and some primitive radio host had this conversation, they could have had the same damn conversation. What's getting attached to it now is the belief that we must do something about this.
Right, mm-hmm. Behavior.
Well, we're not going to do anything about it. Lake Superior was at a record low in 1998. Now it's at a record high.
How far of a signal do you think that primitive radio station would have had? A
couple of feet.
Sure. He did make mention of that right there at the end, the ways that we need to change.
Yeah, but he.
Well. But when you mention climate change, it's so vague and so open.
Because the climate is always changing.
Right. It doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean a specific thing. It's just a generality.
Let me tell you something. I was alerted to this by Mike Benson, who's a 3M guy. All right.
He's making tape over there.
I think he does more than that.
Oh.
He said, you know, I was reading a bit online, and this caught my eye. I've been paying less attention to climate change hysteria lately because I think it will all work itself out as soon as Germany and Sweden start having multiple blackouts in a couple of years. And he linked me to some stories about their as they downplay their power grid, they're going to run out of power, I think. But that is a topic for later discussion. I wholeheartedly agree that climate change is now merely a theocracy. And this bit at the end of an article on PhD climate scientist Judith Curry's website summed it up pretty well. I've included the snippet relative to the theocracy below, but the whole thing is worth the read. Also, given the topics on the show recently, I can't help but imagine a different version of the Far Side cartoon of the dinosaurs smoking. Right. Recall it was captioned the real reason the dinosaurs went extinct. In my version, the dinosaurs aren't smoking, but T-Rex, with his tiny little arms, is trying in vain to eat a can of ravioli over the sink. Good luck, Mike. He alerted me to a piece. Oh, you have to hear this. It's just splendid. He alerted me to a piece that was published by a climate scientist named Judith Curry. An article about her that was published in Quadrant magazine, or Quadrant, whatever that is. And here's the pertinent part. The bottom line of politically correct thought on the matter, the thought that we must collectively do something drastic now to prevent climate change in the future, is so full of holes that it brings the overall sanity of mankind into question. For what it is worth, one possible theory is that mankind, or at least that fraction of it that has become both overeducated and more delicate as a result of a massive increase of its wealth in recent times, has managed to remove the beliefs of existing religions from its consideration and now misses them. As a replacement, it has manufactured a set of beliefs about climate change that can be used to guide and ultimately to control human behavior. The beliefs are similar to those of established religions in that they are more or less unprovable in any strict scientific way.
That was
fascinating.
There
you have it, folks. There you have it.
And we almost hit that point. Was it last week when we started talking about this being a...
A theocracy.
Yeah, no.
Runaway.
A runaway theocracy.
No, it's not hitting them.
Yeah, that's what we were talking about.
A Jim Jones type of...
Oh, a cult.
A cult, yeah, thank you. Yeah.
It's missing the one distinction you need for a cult, and that is an unquestioned leader.
But she nailed it.
This is it.
That's it. Can we get her on?
Yeah, why not? I'll try. Sure.
How about only one smart person on at a time?
Sure.
And we used it up today.
We used it today. Yeah. We had a smart person now.
Yes.
Say, are we going to see our friends from EcoFun at Grunhofer's on Friday?
We're going to work on that. I know that they...
I think Tim's coming up with a gift card.
And they are going to donate a $100 gift card to give away at the Grunhofer's live broadcast this Friday.
We're talking about Tim Bloom. He's the owner of EcoFun Motorsports in Forest Lake. That can't be more than 5 or 6 miles due north of Grunhofer's. EcoFun specializes in quality, affordable scooters, mopeds, youth ATVs, electric bikes, youth snowmobiles, and ATVs. I am captivated by the electric bikes. I want to get a Bentelli e-bike. They're extraordinary. They have a 20-mile range and 5 different assist levels. These things are so packed with gadgetry and technology that they hold their own in a garage full of cylinders.
Dumb it down to this, Joe.
Okay.
If you're an old fart and you still want to cruise around the neighborhood, your knees are barking, this is the perfect... Right.
They really are. Plus, they have a full line of Yamaha equipment. So they've got the gas and the electric going. It's a fantastic store. No other store in Minnesota offers an on-the-floor display of electric bikes that compares to what you will see at EcoFun. You can find out more at EcoFunMotorsports.com.
A beautiful lawn is a super quick click away at ProfessionalTurf.com. From their very first visit, for your free, no-obligation estimate, to the last of autumn, you will have serious lawn pride. The best on the block. Things are greening up nicely around Gumption County right now. That means one thing, dandelions. Unless you're already a ProfessionalTurf.com customer, then you don't have any dandelions or any other weeds. And all you have to do is click. Click on it right now, ProfessionalTurf.com.
Leroy Jenkins!
In hardware stores, sifting through the nuts and bolts of life. Joe Suchere.
And this segment of Garage Logic presented by ProfessionalTurf.com. Nice. Is your mic on, Joe?
That was the rare case where not turning his mic on worked to our advantage. Right.
Worked out.
I have a completely self-serving question.
Okay.
But I'm a mayor.
Oh, I love these.
And
yes.
I think that it's important when the mayor comes up with a question, it might... also benefit other constituents of the great Gumption County.
Asking for a friend.
Is it possible this could lead to mockery?
Yeah, I'm sure it will.
Yeah, let's go, baby.
I'm sure it will.
Leroy.
I already bounced it off Kenny, and he was seriously puzzled, which was the correct response.
All right.
And I admit, this is entirely self-serving. I'm putting out a call to GLers. I don't care where you live in the world. Bulgaria, South Africa, the Arctic, Seattle,
Poland.
Whatever.
Owatonna.
Does anyone know of a foolproof way to eliminate from the engine bay of a car the Z-Bart rust-proof coating that had been sprayed on there 40 years ago? And I'm talking about this. When you open the hood of an old British car, for example, part of the enjoyment and part of the aesthetic is to keep that engine bay clean and polished and what have you. And oftentimes I've been running into cars that are pretty good cars, but that damn rust proofing is in there. And that means if it's a red car, instead of red interior fender wells, you've suddenly got this wrinkled black crap all over the interior fender wells and the firewall.
And it looks awful.
It looks terrible. Now, my question is... you can go to the Google, and don't you get going on me.
Oh, I'm sure the high percentage.
Are you saving it up?
Yes, I'm sure the high percentage of British car
This has nothing to do with British cars.
It has nothing to do with British cars. It could be any car, but I'm particularly interested in British cars. Here's my question. You can go to the Google, and you can find 500,000 hits on, you got to get this kind of brush, and you buy this kind of distillant, and you get in there and put on rubber gloves and blah, blah. Oh. No. I want to know if there is someone who does this for a living and has perfected it, who has perfected the craft, or am I ultimately am I going to find out that you're screwed unless you pull the engine, strip the engine bay, then sandblast it out of there and repaint it, in which case I do not want to do that.
And you would prefer to have this undercoating removed and leave the paint, the original paint,
that's
in
it.
Pristine condition.
That's it.
Okay.
Which is going to – that's a tough
– that's why I want to know if someone – does this for a living, that they have taken it upon themselves to perfect the removal of this stuff, and they know how to do it.
Prior to mockery, yeah. I do have a serious question. Is this something that a detailer would know how to do, or?
I don't think so.
This is beyond someone that's detailing cars?
That's a reasonable question.
Okay. Otherwise, I got my guy, Robert.
You know what? My next-door neighbor's been doing body work for the last 30 years, and he's really, really good. I'll ask him tonight.
I'm looking for a guy. Yeah. This is all they do.
Yeah.
I don't even know if that exists.
This is under the wheel you said, right?
No, you pop the hood and you're looking at the engine.
Okay.
And there on a Triumph, for example, a TR6 or a TR4, you see the curved interior fender wells.
Yep.
Those are covered with this goop. And ideally, you want your car to be not covered with that goop.
But, Chris, you're partially right. It's the same material that they use under the car and in the wheel wells.
What you should do then is bury it in some sand, like up in the Brainerd area, see if that just rips it right off of there.
I seem to remember having vehicle suits where it started flaking off.
It does. It does. And, I suppose if you were completely nuts, I'm not there yet, nuts.
Almost.
And you wanted to devote 6 months to this.
Oh, yeah, that'd be a project.
You could probably do it. But I'm of the suspicion that brighter people than me have tackled this and have perfected a means of doing it.
Is the rest of the body, the paint, original condition?
Perfect.
In original condition.
Yes.
So, in fact, if you did have to...
I'm speaking of a particular car I have in mind.
If you did have to blast it away and then repaint it, that would actually detract or bring the value down because it's not original paint.
Yeah, but paradoxically, I'm not that concerned about originality. In the terms of the engine bay having to be repainted, I'm of the belief that there's somebody that can prevent that. I'm of the belief that there's somebody that's invented a product or they have a system or a means, and they say, yeah, leave your car with me for 6 days. Here's what's going to cost you. It'll come back as new. That's what
I'm
looking
for. Wheel it over to New Central Auto Body. It's a Garage Logic shop.
I get that. I'll be glad to call
them. Call Paul or Adam over.
My point being, very self-serving, I admit it.
Yeah,
I'm using precious podcast time here.
Well, sell yourself short.
Very self-serving to put out because we got listeners all over the country and all over the world. Somebody's going to know the answer to this.
Okay.
They can email me at gljoe@garagelogic.com. Now I'll move on. I'm sorry.
No, okay. Go ahead.
Now I have a saucepan that I can't quite get clean on the bottom. Is there a something stronger than Bonami or
Comet? I was thinking there's going to be a guy. Yes. I'll swing by the station, leave me the keys.
Give me your,
I'll be back in 2 weeks.
I'll drive it over there right now.
Why don't you just take the saucepan
down
to a weed-free sandy beach, which we used to do with the grill, and you rub it in the sand. If you had Aquaside, you'd have the weed-free beach.
Yes.
You'd have clear water. There'd be the sand. Take your saucer pan down there and stand there in your little swimsuit, your little frock, and clean that thing off.
We should have recorded that segment before they got here.
Who?
You and I.
Oh, yeah.
The undercoating.
You knew it was going to lead to mockery.
Right. Well, you can't have that.
Aquaside has been keeping lakeside lake shores clean for more than 60 years. That's why today's record temp, 92 in 1963, kids were swimming in a weed-free beach because Aquaside has been around a long time. The products are easy to use. They work right away. You fan these pellets out, bing, bang, boom. The weeds aren't strangling little Bessie when she goes in the water chasing her puppy. Aquaside is registered with both the EPA and DNR, and their products are completely safe for your family. I'm a lake guy. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be talking to you about Aquaside if I thought this harmed fish or lakes.
I'm a
big believer in lakes. Don't let weeds overtake your lake or pond this summer. Call Aquaside today. They'll identify your weed problem and make sure your place looks great all summer long. You can call Aquaside at 1-800-328 1-800-328-9350. That's 1-800-328-9350. Or go to aquaside.com. Hmm. You got that, boys?
Yep.
Loud and clear.
Our chef out in Montana, Scott Matura.
Yep.
In reference to the podcast in which you read about the hysteria surrounding the excessive moose population as well as the diminishing growth, I believe the moose population they cited was 2,000. Excuse me. Somewhere around 1994, give or take a year, I spent 8 days backpacking Isle Royale with a friend, and oh, how times have changed. All we heard from the National Park Ranger was the healthy population of moose, and they cited a number of 1,900 moose. And I can tell you that it is one of the densest areas I have ever been in outdoors. It rivals our wilderness area here in the Rocky Mountains. So you mean to tell me that 1,900 moose is healthy, but 2,000 are now excessive, and suddenly this thick, rich forest is now in trouble barely 20 years later with very little human interference? Seems 100 moose can do a heck of a lot of damage. On a lighter note, I did take a canoe that is provided by the Forest Service on that same trip out to the largest island in the largest lake on the largest island in the biggest lake in the world. That has come under suspicion, that claim.
It has?
I have another document here.
Okay.
So the claim is that there's a lake on Isle Royale.
Yes. Yep. And that lake has an island.
And there's an island on that lake,
yep,
which makes it the largest lake on the largest island in the biggest lake. Right? Where is this piece?
Somebody, it's getting too ornate. It sounds like a fantasy island.
I got it.
De plane. you had to set me up, didn't you?
Yeah, I did.
French
here
explorer.
Here we go from Frederick. Frederick Tackany. Manitoulin Island is the largest lake island in the world. It is located in Lake Huron. The island encompasses an area of 2,766 square kilometers and is the 31st largest island in Canada. The island itself has 108 freshwater lakes. Many of these lakes have their own islands. With an area of 104 square kilometers, Lake Manitou in the Manitoulin Island is the world's largest lake within a freshwater island. Another interesting fact is associated with the Manitoula Island. The island hosts the Treasure Island, an island located in Lake Mindamoya. The Treasure Island is the largest island in a lake on an island in a lake in the world.
You have to stop. You have to stop.
I think
stop.
You can also play blackjack there.
I'm going to have a stroke.
Holy mackerel. Well, somebody got themselves one hell of a big island in a big lake on an island in a big lake.
But then wait. I'm not trying to be funny. I'm being serious. What about Australia? Would that technically be classified?
Australia, for God's sakes. No. Australia's a continent.
That's what I'm saying.
Well, that's not an island. Just a minute.
Kind of an island,
I can't get to the scan bucket fast enough. I just can't get there
fast
enough.
That's not an island. That's connected. Look it.
No, it's not.
Okay. Isn't it?
No. That's clear.
No.
I see a couple lakes
there. It's connect. Go north, Rook, on that map.
Okay.
See? That's connected. Look at that. Right there.
That's just a bridge.
You know what? I'll be doing my crossword puzzle.
Not connected. Let me
know when you've moved
on. Look at this. See the little current? Not connected at little current.
I hear there's
rumors on the internet.
I have filters on internet.
What's this thing?
Make a connection.
He can handle a power saw.
Oh, yeah, lady. Okay.
It's not connected right there by little current.
Somewhere out there,
mm-hmm. Look at
is
that.
The biggest island.
Here we go.
Ain't none of my business.
I feel you.
That contains a lake
that has
the biggest island
that has a lake on it.
No. The biggest
23 across. The answer is Easy Street.
Big islands. Is it?
Yeah.
Great.
Such. You got to move on, man.
I will.
You got to move
on. Hit the brake.
I don't even have time to talk about my Lagoon Island.
No.
Are you ready for a different point of view? Say, this is Josh Arnold, Mr. Money Talk. I'm here, as always, to answer your questions on stocks, bonds, mutual funds, what you should be doing with your retirement dollars. But of course, you do have to give me a call at 952-925-5608. With much market volatility on the horizon, you're going to need some help. So give me a call at 952-925-5608. You always get straight talk, not sugar-coated advice from me, Mr. Money Talk Josh Arnold. I'm here to help you personally set your portfolio to deal with this upcoming volatility. So make a point to give me a call for a no-cost, no-obligation 48-minute review at 952-925-5608.
Investment advisor services offered by Josh Arnold Investment Consultant, LLC, a registered advisor in the state of Minnesota. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. All investments involve risk.
Oh my God! Oh my!
Even I know.
Slow it down.
And so, in my state of the union, or state, my speech to the nation,
right?
Whatever you want to call it,
right?
So I'm confused. Last night I was going to take a taxi cab over to 7th, and somebody said Uber will pick you up. And five guys came by named Frank, Tommy, and Willie. I never saw Uber. Uber's a foreign name.
Such, this is my
fault.
Then
some guy pulled up, and I knew it wasn't real because he said, can I give you a lift? But he spelled it with a Y. So I knew it was trick.
I asked him during the break. First,
it's a trick, huh?
Lift is spelled with an I.
We're working on something for this Friday up at Grundhoffer's, and I asked Matthew if he knew how to do an auctioneer. Could he be an auctioneer? And then I asked him if he could do it as George Bush.
And things
just spiraled out of control.
We tried three. Kenny got confused when I asked for, does he have change for a 7?
Jeff writes, Joel, in listening to the podcast for Monday, May 5, I was disappointed to hear Kenny make the claim that most of The Who's big hits were sung by Pete Townsend and not Roger Daltrey. Nothing could be further from the truth. I'm especially disappointed in you and Johnny Guitar, who should have known better, and immediately corrected him. If you were to listen to Baba O'Reilly, which Kenny probably calls Teenage Wasteland, you can clearly delineate the vocals between Roger and Pete. P.S. The next time Diana Ross feels violated by a TSA agent, she should just tell them to stop in the name of love. Right. This is another one ripping, Kenny.
Wait a second. Let's stop on that one, Joe. Listeners, you've got to know. Whenever I say anything musical, it's only for one reason.
You're trying to irritate Height.
Yeah, I am. I'm just trying to bug John because he bites on everything I throw at him.
And in all honesty, it's an art form because I see it unfold right in front of me, and it's beautiful.
Please let Kenny know that this old cowboy and Tin Man Ventura Highway are completely different songs, and that he is now disqualified for making any statements or opinions on anything to do with music. Good luck, Greg.
Again, dear listeners, please don't take this to heart. It's all, and you know what, the Marshall Tucker thing, I like that band, and I only stumbled onto this thing with John by accident, once I found out John loves him, well then you just have to ride him even harder.
And in fact, if John's not here and the subject of music comes up and you offer up an opinion, that's when I believe you, or when you're taking serious.
Rook?
But when John's here, no.
Rook?
Yes. Right.
Have you come up with the archival highlight that we'll play tomorrow on Positive Thursday?
Yes.
You have access
to it. I
have that. Because we're starting to get suggestions now.
Oh, good.
And Corey wants, he said he started listening or got hooked when we started talking about Whiplash the Cowboy Monkey that rode around on the back of a dog.
Yes.
Yeah. Was that the Taco John's commercial?
No, it was on the show. And so maybe you got to find Whiplash he thinks it was about, I don't know, 2003 or 4.
Okay.
He said he grew tired of hearing the same songs on the radio, and he found us.
Nice.
And we were talking about Whiplash, the Cowboy Monkey.
All right.
He
wants so that. Noted.
Right. This is from Gary Brock in Mill Valley, California. Heard you complaining about crumbling infrastructure, specifically dams. We have a similar problem here in California, but pertaining to reservoirs. The state hasn't created a new reservoir for about 40 years, during which time The population of California has increased tremendously. So about every 10 or 15 years, the state experiences a drought, and the government at all levels of our one-party state blame it on global warming, while our water bills go up and the vast majority of winter rains and spring snow runoff just flows into the ocean.
Right.
Mill Valley, California.
It's interesting that you read that, and I didn't know you were going to read it, because on my Google right now is the question, what caused the 1930s drought?
The Dust Bowl years.
Yeah, it was the Dust Bowl years, and it was Dust Bowl because of the farming practices at the time. But what caused it to be so dry? And it just turns out that it was lack of rain and lack of snow from
nature.
Years going.
Yeah.
And I was wondering, as I was listening to that interview with that scientist, what they would say if we, in fact, had another drought like that. Would it just be simply a drought because there's no rain or snow, or would it be global warming?
It'd be global warming.
Right.
Dear Joe, I lived in Minnesota for several years and enjoyed the show. I listened as often as possible after I moved. I love the podcast and I'm a faithful listener. I feel being a GLer is shortchanging me on my lifetime cylinder index. I tend to take care of all my cylinders and therefore have less turnover than others. For example, my self-propelled lawnmower is more than 20 years old. I have replaced the wheels, transmission, blades, pull cord, numerous air filters and plugs over the years. While others may have retired their mower and purchased another, I choose to repair and maintain over replacement. Same with my automobiles, snow blowers, trimmers, etc. Unfortunately, this keeps my LCI, lifetime cylinder index, or cylinder vitae, artificially low. Just a thought, keep pushing back wherever 404 area code is. I don't know where that is.
That's not...
So should there be an adjustment to the index number itself if you're running vintage cylinders?
No, no.
Original condition?
The index is what it is. Okay. The index is what it is.
Right.
Okay, and finally, to finish this
Atlanta.
Email segment. Is it Atlanta?
Atlanta? Yes.
Is Atlanta? Craig writes, how is it you keep having a garage door opener every spring when you never have a closer before the end of the year? Regardless of what you do with the opener, I think we need a companion event in the fall, a garage door closer, perhaps the first Friday below 50 degrees or the third weekend in September.
Hey, have you heard how difficult it is to open it? Forget the closer. Leave it open, damn it.
Mine's going to stay open a lot longer than the third weekend in September. Also, am I crazy for throwing out the idea of you doing a special remote from Bar Harbor during their boat show? You're not crazy. Aren't we
going
to call John Allen? Maybe try
that? We'll set. Probably not. Well, maybe this year. I don't know. We'll see.
Well, I'm going to it this year.
Yeah. When is it?
That's right, because Kenny's going to stay in your room.
No. That was for a different event.
Oh.
That was for a different
hammocks
event.
In there?
That was for a
You're
different.
On top.
That was for. Hey, Mother's Day's coming up.
I get
you
the
know,
left side.
You know Mother's Day's coming up this Sunday. There's still time to get to any of the three RF Moeller Jewelers stores. They have the most handsome. See, I know women like to think it's beautiful, but I'm calling it handsome. The handsome bracelets and earrings and diamonds and rings and watches. They have 6 goldsmiths in stock. Not in stock. You can't buy a goldsmith, but they've got them in the store. And they'll not only repair but your heirlooms, they'll restore your heirlooms. Nothing you bring to Moeller's for repair ever leaves the store. But we're talking purchasing now. You got graduations coming up. You got Mother's Day coming up. No one is prepared to help you better with that gift selection than Moeller. Remember, you're buying an heirloom. You're buying something for your family that will get passed down through the generations. If you mentioned that you heard this on the GL podcast, hey, is Moeller throwing in something at Grunhofer's?
Rook.
I think he is.
Yes.
Yeah.
Bobby?
Yeah, no. I think you were told that before the show.
We got an alert here.
Okay.
I just got a text from him a couple minutes ago. $250 gift certificate.
Really?
He's gonna hand it over and we're gonna give it away.
Fantastic.
Well, my ATV battery is dead. Could he handle?
Nope. He said we're just gonna give.
They'll
a
replace
gift
your watch battery if you tell them you're a GL podcast.
I can't
listener.
Bring my ATV
they told
in.
Me no. Not
unload
to promise
it.
No. Anymore. He said, don't promise any more than that. We're giving you a gift certificate.
It's Mother's Day. Get to RF Moeller at 50th and France in Edina, Ford in Cleveland and St. Paul, Gavaday Common in downtown Minneapolis, or online at rfmoeller.com.
You cannot stop it. You just make a move. Joe Suzuri.
The guy was writing to me about he had some thoughts on Trump's taxes, which is neither here nor there. He's writing almost from the standpoint of an accountant. But he says, I need to mention, I just stopped in at Sody's Cigar and Pipe Shop, picked up a few Boveda bags. Nice guys, good shop. We're talking about Sody's Cigar and Pipe Store out in Stillwater.
Hell yeah.
You go to if you're headed eastbound, you go to the last light on 36 before you cross the river. Take a right on, what's Cosgrove, isn't it?
Osgood.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Osgood. And you go down a half a block or a block, and there you see it. And here's the distinction. So, they've got all the greatest cigars, and they've got a great humidor, and they've got the pipe tobacco, and they've got the lighters and the clippers. They've got all the accessories. These guys are experts. They know their stuff. They've all come to this from other careers and other marketing experiences, and they thought long and hard about how are we going to put together the best cigar store that we can. And they came to a really, really great conclusion. That is, separate their smoking lounge from the actual store itself. So when you go in the store itself and pick out your cigars, you're not overwhelmed mm-hmm. with cigar smoke. And then in the smoking lounge, they've created a state-of-the-art, high-tech ventilation system. So it's just a really, really pleasant environment. Now, you might be thinking to yourself, well, why in the hell are you telling me that you were doing everything possible to not smell the cigars when we're cigar smokers?
No, I got it for you.
Yeah.
It's my wife is the biggest enabler in the planet. She will go into a cigar shop. She will buy me something, and I'm convinced she'll do it just so she can complain about me smoking.
Okay.
But she's right, you know, and she has said you go in there and you come out smelling like a cigar.
Well, that's not the case at Sody's in Stillwater.
Fantastic.
This is grand opening week. There'll be a ribbon cutting at 4 p.m. Thursday. Scott, Luke, and the guys are really great. Tell them the mayor sent you. It's the last light before you head over the bridge. You can also find them at SodyCigar.com, but don't forget the pipe and the pipe tobacco and the pipes. It's just a fantastic store, and they've really thought this out. So say hello to the guys at Sody's. It's grand opening week at Sody's Cigar and Pipe.
What's that? What's the brand of cigar you brought back? That thing's really good. I've had a couple now.
Well, they brought over a box of Romeo and Juliet.
That's what they are.
Yeah.
I'm normally a punch guy, but these things are wonderful.
Well, if you're a punch guy, they'll take care of you.
So let me ask you, you're a Hoyo de Monterey with the double Maduro wrap.
No, just single Maduro.
Dang it.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
Pretty good, huh?
Yeah, you're all right.
How did you... Well, it's not worth asking.
I must have heard it sometime.
I tried to reach this lady and failed.
Oh, you did try to give her a call. Oh, I thought you were referring to that genius who was calling global warming a theocracy.
Oh, In the previous segment.
Oh, no, I want to really find her and try to book her for... No, there was a Baltimore TV anchor, longtime TV anchor named Mary Bubala. She's been canned because she questioned... The history of the city's mayors. She's been canned.
Huh?
She's looking for accuracy, and she was...
Mary Bubala, the anchor of CBS affiliate WJZ-TV's 4 p.m. and 5 p.m. newscast, no longer worked for the station as of Monday, 4 days after her question to Loyola University Maryland professor Carsonia K. Wise Whitehead led to a firestorm of criticism, the station's manager Audra Swain told the Baltimore Sun. Bubala confirmed her departure on Facebook and said the station she's worked at since 2003 was forced to let her go. In my 22 years of... So you can imagine that her question was pretty bad.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, you're going to lose your job. In my 22 years of working in TV news in Baltimore, 15 of those years with WJZ, I have always treated people with the utmost respect and dignity. I love my job because I love the people of Baltimore, Bubala wrote. Unfortunately, I now stand in the path of a tornado. WJZ was forced to let me go. I am saddened and shocked by this decision. Baltimore has been my home for 25 years, and I am grateful for the friendships I have made with the people of Baltimore. The anchor woman began receiving backlash last week after she interviewed Whitehead on air and asked about the last three Baltimore mayors, Sheila Dixon, Stephanie Rawlings-Blake, and Catherine Pugh. Pugh resigned last week amid state and federal investigations into sales of her children's book. If you followed the exploits of politics in Baltimore at all, you know they've had a series of problems in the mayor's office.
Yeah, yes. It's been messy.
We've had, and here's the question, we've had three female African-American mayors in a row. They were all passionate public servants. Two resigned, though. Is this a signal that a different kind of leadership is needed to move Baltimore City forward? Bubala asked Whitehead. Whitehead responded to the question by saying she did not believe the Maryland city needed a change in leadership. Many viewers immediately slammed Bubala for asking the question, including Mickey Mayo, the former president of the Baltimore Association of Black Journalists. So, this happened following the resignation of Baltimore Mayor Catherine Pugh? Ugh, I'm not even sure I want to hear the excuse for this. I'm cringing and cursing, Mayo tweeted, along with a video of Bubala asking the question. Another Twitter user wrote, as a black man in America, I found your question about having three female African Americans on the evening newscast offensive. In a city which is over 60% black, you have offended thousands of people. You owe your listeners an apology. So what she did, of course, was quickly apologize.
Right, yeah.
I'm so deeply sorry and sincerely regret the words I chose.
What?
How could she have saved herself? What was...
To
have avoided this controversy, she would have had to say, for the last three consecutive mayors, we've had a lot of trouble in City Hall. They're all passionate public servants, but do you think we need a different kind of leadership? Would that have gotten her off the hook?
I think she would have been accused of alluding to racial.
So in other words, you can't say anything anymore.
No.
Getting closer to not being able to talk to each other.
If a minority takes offense to it.
Well, they did immediately.
Would it be better just to leave race out of it?
That's what my rephrase question did.
I mean, when I'm looking at the question, I would just say we've had three female mayors in a row. Is it time for a change?
And you're sexist.
And then you're still going to
lead into
that. Now you got to get female out of there.
But
for the last three mayors.
She herself is a female, so isn't she allowed to ask those sort of questions?
She was partially covered when she said design style. Was she not?
What do you mean design style?
Leadership style. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Bubala was quick to apologize and released a statement saying she was so deeply sorry and sincerely regret the words I chose. She concluded the apology by asking viewers to let her regain their trust. The criticism continued, however, after she released a statement Monday, after BABG, what's that, Baltimore Area Black Journalism, released a statement Monday calling Bubala's question racist and sexist, so she couldn't win on either way. The question implies race and gender are qualifiers in one's ability to lead while also demonizing African Americans and women as poor leaders. While Bubala apologized, there was no acknowledgement of the gaffe or apology on air by her, WJZ-TV, or CBS. This is unacceptable.
Right.
Since the apology should be administered in the same fashion that the damaging question was delivered.
She wanted to do an on-air apology. Mm-hmm. The station would not let her.
Wow.
I think if she would have done an on-air apology, it would have opened up probably a very helpful discussion.
I don't know why she couldn't ask the question she asked.
What?
Yeah. I don't know. That's, you know.
Not everything is, but that's not racist.
They've had three horse bleep mayors in a row.
Now that's the way to word it, right there.
Yeah.
Right there.
You've had, hey lady, you expert from Loyola, this city's been led by three horse bleep mayors, two of whom quit and one of them's now being examined federally for corruption.
It's not good leadership.
What should we do differently?
Yeah.
Right there. It's just
the, higher, better, more
that's
qualified.
That's just down
mayors.
On the farm common sense,
see
right there.
See what the left
Such.
Does, though. See what the left does.
But she didn't
Power
do
wash.
That, Joe. She admitted she phrased it wrong. And boy, I think she did phrase it wrong.
Well, okay, but I would have been perfectly fine with the question. She didn't. I thought she was being fairly decent with the question. I don't know.
I think the station should have allowed her to apologize on the air, and then they could have opened up a discussion that probably would have been very helpful.
Well, see, I have a
to
different,
all involved.
Okay, but I have a different take on it. The left is condescending to minorities, in my estimation.
Oh, without question.
The left is disingenuous. The left is not doing you any favor. This is why I want black parents to get involved with school discipline, for example. Don't tell me my kid is lesser than. But here's what happened there. The left came in, and because she asked a straightforward question, she was attacked. To appease the left, she would have had to have asked it in such a way that made these three female black mayors lesser than.
Yeah.
In other words, because we are lesser than, we don't expect to get our toes stepped on. Hey, you've had three horse bleep mares in a row.
Right.
And now, so this gal gets canned because you know what else happened? The unwashed Greek chorus of Twitter users went after it.
Anonymous, yeah. And they still go about their life and their jobs. Right. This person's job and career are in jeopardy.
This isn't power washing. This is just the left saying we expect to be treated specially. And we're not going to subject ourselves. I'm meaning the left now, not necessarily black people.
Right.
The left is saying on behalf of black people, we don't expect any toes to get stepped on here.
Once again, why don't they say,
isn't it a B
as
in B?
Don't do me any favors.
Isn't it a B as in B, S as in S?
You are making me less of a person for trying to change this and think for me.
Check something.
Yeah, you're checking things
off
right now. I'll tell you that for sure.
That's right.
I don't know. I still think your way of phrasing it was the best, and she should have left out woman.
What would have happened?
Woman and race.
Well, I imagine she was talking to some black academician, this female. From Loyola University, and how could she have asked the question? Could she have gotten away with, "Hey, Kamala-Whitehead-Smith, whatever the hell your name is, we've had three really horse bleep lousy mayors here in a row, one of whom's now under federal examination for corruption for using her office to sell her own kid's book. The other two resigned in controversy." She would have gone up in smoke for that, too.
You think so?
Absolutely.
They would have
twisted
it.
There's no way to ask the question. That's what our society has gotten to the point where there's no way a white person can say,
"Okay,
we've had three lousy black female mayors in a row."
Well, we constantly rip the mayor of St. Paul.
Yeah.
We never bring his race up.
No, we don't. We always just say,
he's not female.
Melvin Carter the Turd.
But we're really tough on the guy. And
we're tough on Fry, too.
Boy.
Why can't we be?
Do you think?
Oh, we sure love Coleman.
And you know what?
And Melvin's going to look good compared to the next one.
Who was the nut job that Fry took over for?
Bicycle Betsy.
Oh, we were really tough on her.
Well, yeah. She should have been.
And how does, what's his name? Guy before that.
RT.
RT Ryback. Yeah. He seems like a god walking on water in Minneapolis now.
I'm so sorry I snubbed him to his face.
That's one of my saddest predictions.
I hate that prediction.
And it's coming true.
It's worse than the presence of a male is going to be sexual harassment.
With each succeeding mayor, the closer you get to the country's
tallest
buildings, you will miss the previous mayor.
Right now,
Chris Coleman looks like Winston bleeping Churchill.
I was going to amend your statement, but I'm glad you threw that in because that's not necessarily the case outside of the metro area.
It's happening the closer you get to the country's tallest buildings, which is why you never want to see the abolishment of the Electoral College. Otherwise, the country is then ruled by the country's tallest buildings,
mm-hmm.
where we now have Mysterians who want to control things.
The city council member that you, the city council that you knew and disliked way back when is walking on water now.
It's just
it stems back to there's zero accountability.
In 1919, do you know where fuel for cars was sold?
1919, fuel at the
drugstores?
No.
Drugstores?
That's right.
At the filling station.
Drugstores.
No, it was before filling stations.
Drugstores.
Yeah.
How?
I wonder, I suppose a bottle?
I suppose, yeah.
Big jug.
Yeah, a staticky bottle.
Well, Chief Offsite Correspondent Kelsey, by the way, the Chief Offsite Correspondent truly enjoys that family of foxes he has living on his property.
He's
sending
really
pictures. They have about eight kittens. And
have we verified that that is his place?
Give him my phone number. Tell him I can take care of him.
I don't think he wants him taken care of.
He's doing mouse calls.
I'll bring him back some wall hangers.
Well, he sent this interesting... it's an interesting statistical compilation from 1919. I'm going to tell you more about it in a moment.
Say, how's that scruffy front yard looking? Sad, pathetic, embarrassing, all of the above, and about to be covered in dandelions? This doesn't have to be like this. Let's make it end right now. A beautiful lawn, the best on the block, a click away. ProfessionalTurf.com. Do what I did so many years ago. Schedule a free, no-obligation lawn care estimate. A seasoned ProTurf Pro, they're going to stop by and set up a weed and fertilizer program that's not only safe for our mother, the earth, but guaranteed to give you the most luscious lawn in the neighborhood. Click on it right now, ProfessionalTurf.com. And this segment of Garage Logic, the podcast, presented by ProfessionalTurf.com. By the way, you guys should see my front yard. Hoo, hoo, hoo. After this rain today, I'll be mowing fool tomorrow.
The guy sent me a YouTube clip. You got to look this up. It's hilarious. Hi, Joe. Here is the perfect accessory for your new electric scooter. Well, I'm talking about getting an electric bike from EcoFun Motorsports, not an electric scooter. Maybe you can find this at Dennis Kirk, and it's a YouTube clip. When it opens, you hear an exhaust note from obviously what you think is going to be a scooter. And here comes the scooter around the corner with a guy driving it, and a guy on the back using a trombone to perfectly mimic the sound of exhaust. And it's
really
fantastic.
A trombone?
A trombone. If anyone would have an accessory like that, it would be Dennis Kirk.
Damn.
Located right here in Minnesota, trusted retailer of parts, accessories, and apparel for you and your bike. Huge in-stock selection, guaranteed best prices, fast same-day shipping, and satisfaction guarantee makes Dennis Kirk the best in the business. Doesn't make any difference what kind of bike you ride. They got 160,000 products. Kenny found 72 pages of headlights.
It's six, if I remember right, 682.
682 different kind of lights. Yeah. And if you buy a motorcycle helmet or apparel item for Dennis Kirk and it doesn't fit or you just don't like it or you got FFLF, no problem. DennisKirk.com will pay the return shipping. $89 order ship free. And at DennisKirk.com, order by 8 o'clock today and get it tomorrow.
Is the clip you were talking about, is that the one that you sent me?
Enter in no. Trombone on a scooter, Matthew.
Yeah.
And if your order, if you're only ordering like clutch levers and your order comes to $30, $40, get one of those gas cans made by VP Racing, the world's best gas cans.
Look at this.
Okay, this is so rookie. This is absolutely something
I would pull up.
As a matter of fact, that looks like your kid on the back. Yeah,
this isn't the one I saw. There must be many of these.
This is pretty funny, though.
Can you turn the volume up? Quiet now.
Empty street.
And, of course, it's a little scooter that couldn't possibly make that noise. Right. The guy with the trombone is making the noise.
Trombone.
It sounds like a hot hatch
isn't
coming,
it cool?
Doesn't it?
Yeah.
It sounds
like... That is really, really nifty. Play it again.
Oh,
I never saw anything like that.
Go back.
The one I saw, the guy in the back weighed about 400 pounds.
Uh-oh. And this is in Europe, too.
Yeah. Isn't that fantastic?
Okay.
Trombone scooter on YouTube. 1919.
I'm going to try to resist.
Hold on.
1919.
What one item am I drawn to on the screen that I'm not going to click on? But if I were to click on one, which would it be?
That Martin Short.
Martin Short SCTV game show called Halfwits.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's extremely funny, but I will not click on it right now. After the show, we're going to watch Halfwits.
All right. 1919, one of the best root beers ever made.
100 years ago.
Yep.
The average life expectancy was 47 years for men.
Oh, boy.
What?
Wow. Mm-hmm. I'm doing pretty good then.
Hey,
we all are.
House money. 19 or 18.
But we're told wrong. We're told we're ruined.
Oh, yeah. And we're destroying the earth.
The average fuel for cars sold in drugstores.
Yeah.
14% of all homes had a bathtub.
14%. We're still moving indoors at those.
8% of homes had a telephone. It's 100 years ago. Everyone sitting here at this studio now has a phone in their pocket.
Right.
Would you rather have a bathtub or a telephone?
Bathtub.
Okay, me too.
The maximum speed limit in most cities was 10 miles an hour. The tallest structure in the world was the Eiffel Tower. The average U.S. wage in 1919 was 22 cents an hour.
Oof.
Oof. The average U.S. worker made between $200 and $400 a year. A competent accountant could expect to earn $2,000 a year. Yeah, but a car didn't, you know, nothing cost you anything.
Yeah, Henry Ford, wasn't that his whole goal? Put a car in everybody's hands?
Yeah, a dentist earned $2,500 a year, a veterinarian between $1,500 and $4,000 a year. And a mechanical engineer, about $5,000 a year. More than nine. What am I missing?
I don't think it was a...
What's the point of all this? Why are
I'm
you
I'm getting to
us?
It. Why don't you be patient?
Well,
why don't you just shut the hell
you're
up?
You're sitting next to...
He works with a bad waiter.
Mr. Distracted here is cracking jokes
didn't
behind
something
you.
Wrong? Didn't Henry Ford... Was it a car in every garage? Or was it a...
Chicken in every pot.
In every hand? I don't know.
More than 95% of all births took place at home.
Yuck.
Ooh. 90% Ooh. Of all doctors.
On the phone or in the bathroom.
I'll be in the bar.
Well, no wonder the life expectancy was 47.
Please stop interrupting
me. Really?
90% of all doctors had no college education.
Ugh.
Instead, they attended so-called medical schools, many of which were condemned in the press as substandard. Sugar cost 4 cents a pound. Coffee was 15 cents a pound. Women wash their hair once a month and use borax or egg yolks for shampoo.
Gross.
Really?
Gross.
Canada passed.
Do you know that salt right now costs about 45 cents a pound?
The 5 leading causes of death were pneumonia and influenza, tuberculosis, diarrhea, heart disease, and stroke.
Diarrhea?
Yep.
Death by diarrhea?
That's a tough way to go, isn't it?
Well, I think I was pretty close a couple of weeks ago.
What was the population of Las Vegas, Nevada in 1919?
Oh, it had under 2,000.
I was going to say, yeah.
Under 2,000.
In 3 digits, I bet. I bet it wasn't even 1,000 back then.
1,230.
Yeah.
Crossword puzzles, Kenny, canned beer, and iced tea hadn't been invented yet. There was neither a Mother's Day or Father's Day. 2 out of every 10 adults couldn't read or write. Hell, today it's probably 7. And only 6% of all Americans had graduated from high school. Marijuana, heroin, and morphine were available over-the-counter at drugstores. Back then, pharmacists said heroin cleans the complexion, gives buoyancy to the mind, regulates the stomach bowels, and is a perfect guardian of health.
They used to give drops of cocaine to children.
There were about 200...
Can you imagine giving a kid cocaine?
No.
And last but not least... Sid Hartman's mother got pregnant.
Hey! Yeah.
All right. Gotta
warn me on that one.
Bit of a stretch there, Suchi.
It's from the chief offsite correspondent.
Yeah.
You gonna rip him?
Yeah.
He does more work than you.
Yeah, he does.
All right.
Yeah.
Dave Dahl sends out his forecast Friday, partly cloudy, warmer.
We're not worried about it. We're not
62
worried about
degrees.
It. Let me tell you why we're not worried about it.
Right.
We're gonna be at Grunhofer's
old fashioned
regardless because we're not worried about it being the opener. We came to our senses. I made a mayoral ruling.
Perfect.
If it hits 70, wonderful. It's the opener.
Great.
If we're on the air during the hitting of 70.
Right.
If it doesn't that Friday, then we just had a great, fun party time at Grunhofer's old-fashioned meat mart. Joe, a longtime listener back to the days when you filled in for Barbara Carlson. My family and I are currently traveling through Germany. I have to believe, given their name, that the Grunhofer's great brats come from their German heritage. I've had some great brats, and we'll be making a trip to Grunhofer's when we get home.
Excellent.
I'm talking about Grunhofer's old-fashioned meats in Hugo. North end of Hugo, just east of Highway 61. We'll be there Friday. Our goal is to just really blow Spencer's mind.
Yes.
And clean the store out.
Mm-hmm.
They have 130 different kind of brats. They've got that thick-cut bacon, the double-smoked hams, steaks, burgers.
Jerky.
Everything.
Jerky.
Everything. It's a Kasbah of meat.
Sweet and heat jerky is fabulous.
Mm-hmm. You can also find them at Grunhofer'sMeatMarket.com. These are the highest quality meats. These aren't trucked to town in some rental van wrapped in cellophane.
This ain't a meat market with the guy with
fresh.
The trench coat.
It's red here. They don't open their coat and say you want to buy a steak.
I've been in the cooler.
I know you have. So have I.
My wife was there, too, and she kept her foot outside of the cooler so we wouldn't get locked in because she was a little nervous.
It's grilling season. That's a great time to get to Grunhofer's. And like I said, we're going to be there on Friday.
Then let's give out some of the details for those that might have missed it yesterday.
Starting with the bus.
Yes. So listeners are being asked to park at the Church of St. Genevieve and ride the free shuttle that Spencer is providing. It's under a mile.
This is like when you go to a bar and you get a ride to the Wild game.
So don't worry about it.
Right, it is.
A lot of these GLers are professional tailgaters. Chris, should they be bringing coolers? Should they be bringing grills, chairs, et cetera, fire pits, et cetera, et cetera?
You can bring your own chair. Spencer is providing a bleacher seating that fits up to about 100 people, but listeners can absolutely bring their own chair if they want to. They're going to have sampling on site. They're going to be selling beer on site.
Oh.
And all of it is going to be right at the Grunhofer's location, as Joe mentioned. We're going to be there from noon to 2. The shuttle is being provided from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. There's going to be porta potties on site.
Yeah, you got
to
go home sometime, folks.
We're also giving away a lot of cool things. We're giving away a $50 gift certificate to Grunhofer's, a $75 gift certificate to the Minnesotan. Mike Fratelloni gave us $250 to give away that you can use towards a grill at a Fratelloni's Ace Harbor and Garden Store.
And we just met Big Time Sports Auctions.
Yes, and he's giving us.
What was his name, Joe?
I have his card.
For
right
$1 million, what was his first name?
You know, Kenny. I have a lot on my mind, and I just met the fellow. He's a Cracker Jack guy.
Can we recreate a scene?
Oh yes, please, let's do it.
Just a minute.
Hold on. Let me describe what they gave us: a really cool autographed Anthony Barr framed poster, and also a really cool Joe Mauer framed picture of his last game as he's tipping his cap in his catching.
And
gear.
Let me tell you something about this photo. If you look at it long enough, you will end up crying.
It's just cool.
It's that good. But Such is sitting in here. And the meeting's winding up, and Such goes, Steve, let me get your name, Steve.
Yeah. Come on in here. Let me get your name. I thought, wait a minute, what?
And Steve, now, it's and Steve, now an Steve, hour later.
It's Steve Granquist.
He knew that.
Yes.
But here's what I learned. Not only did this guy come up with top drawer sports memorabilia, there are certificates of authentication on the back of these things.
Authenticity.
That's right. But here's the deal, what we're going to do with the, who do we have? We have Joe Mauer.
And Anthony Barr.
And Anthony Barr. And if you want to take one of those home, I think what we'll do is have a raffle. And you come up and put your name in a bowl, and I am going to suggest that a contribution would be greatly appreciated, because half the proceeds are going to go to the Muscular Dystrophy Association, with which I'm affiliated, and half go to First Stork.
Second Stork.
So
take that.
Why not to the First Stork?
We'll take that.
What happened to the first one? First Stork?
Where'd they go? SecondStork.org. You can learn all about it.
But we'll tell you more about Steve's marvelous.
And this
stuff
is next why
week.
We were trying to come up with ideas for these photos, and that's why I asked Matthew if he could be an auctioneer and if he could do it in the voice of George
Bush.
How
about 800, 700, 600?
Going backwards.
Wrong word.
You're going the other way.
See, that's why I got fired as an auctioneer.
And by the way, Moeller threw in a $250 gift certificate, and EcoFund's giving us $100 to give away, too.
Here's what you do.
Hey, if we're lucky, they might bring us down a bike or two.
Mm-hmm. Get the mayor up there.
Are we eligible?
I'm going to bring some Sodi cigars.
Are we eligible? Because we're not employees.
They've said we are.
We are eligible.
I'm just kidding. I'm not going to.
The event, you have time to go one direction up to EcoFund in Forest Lake.
Yep.
You head in the other way, stop at Moeller's in time for Mother's Day. Any of the three RF Moeller stores, 50th in France and Edina, Ford in Cleveland
it's
in St. Paul, Gavaday Common in downtown Minneapolis, or rfmoeller.com. Tomorrow, the toughest show of the week to put together. Both of you are tasked with...
I haven't found my audio yet,
tasked. And also a highlight from the archives.
Yeah, and I'm noticing there's going to be a little more than that, because the baby laugh one, it's not exceptionally long. It's under 2 minutes.
Then find me another one. Have two highlights tomorrow.
Yeah, we'll have two highlights, so I'm going to find another one.
Yeah, give me three or four.
Exactly.
Yes, sir.
Do whatever I tell you to do.
Yes.
And do it quick, because I'm a bad waiter.
Well, let me tell you about the GarageLogic.com. Our online home for everything Garage Logic. Greg Holcomb has some fantastic creations. If it's your first time poking around there, go to the Features drop-down button and click on the GL Comics. Also, see what's on I started Child 44, and I'm not kidding. I'm about 70 pages into it. I'm not joking.
I'd be shocked if you don't love it.
Okay, I like it so far. Find out what's on Joe's bookshelf, Author's Corner. And remember, there's a lot of podcasts out there that you have not listened to. If it's your first time listening to Garage Logic, they're all listed at garagelogic.com. And if you'd like to be an advertiser, all these fine advertisers are very close to the staff. We'd welcome you as well. Garage Logic podcast version. We'll see you at Grunhofer's on Friday.
Wait, one more thing.
Attack that microphone.
Did I get my family podcast plug in today?
Oh, my God.
Dang it. Table Talk with Rookie's Family?
Turn this off.
All right, goodbye.